Welcome to Notes from the Western Edge, a monthly on-demand webcast featuring musicians who create on the edges of jazz, new music, electronics, and a broad expanse of sonic spaces in between. In program number 6, we'll hear from two saxophonists, Chris Potter and Larry Oakes. Over the past few years, Chris Potter seemed to be everywhere, sometimes with Dave Douglas, sometimes with Dave Holland's big band or small group, at other times with bassist Steve Swallow's trio, or even on the road with Steely Dan. Most recently, he's on the road with the Bassless Quartet that recorded his latest album, Underground. Larry Oakes has been playing saxophone on the edges of improvised music ever since he first heard Sun Ra in a tiny club in a converted Philadelphia church back in the 1960s. Since then, he's gone on to co-found the San Francisco-based Rova Saxophone Quartet, to form the trio Maybe Monday with guitarist Fred Frith, and to work with a vocalist who sings long traditional Turkish folk songs. I hope you enjoy the show. At 10 years of age, Chris Potter knew what he wanted to do.
I think the first time I heard the Dave Brubeck Quartet and just Paul Desmond's sound, you know, I think that's what kind of turned me on to the saxophone. It's just like, wow, that's a really interesting sound. I'd like to be able to do that. So I just kind of bugged them until they got me a saxophone.
The they in that statement was Potter's parents, who encouraged his interest in music while he was growing up. From his childhood living room in Columbia, South Carolina, to the stage of the Village Vanguard in New York City, where this tune, 7.5, was recorded in 2002, Potter has traveled a long, long way. But it all started by listening to records.
I was just always attracted to music. I think from my family's record collection, that's really how I can say that I heard music. You know, no one in my family plays a musical instrument, really. But they had a really good record collection. They had all sorts of classical music. They had, you know, the Beatles and Joni Mitchell and Mothers of Invention and music from Bali, music from Greece, all sorts of stuff. There was a record of Chicago blues musicians that really grabbed me when I was young. I think it was a series, I think it was on Vanguard, called Chicago, the Blues Today. There was Volume 1, Volume 2, they had those. And something about that really, really grabbed me, along with the Beatles. That was kind of my first, you know, the first music I really, really got into. And then I guess from their jazz records, it's kind of how I started discovering the saxophone. They had some Miles records and some Eddie Harris records.
The Beatles we'll get back to later. But first, let's hear Potter talk more about his journey while we listen to another tune from his album Lift, Stella by Starlight, a jazz standard composed in 1944.
I was very fortunate to have some excellent instruction at the beginning. They could see that I was really interested in learning how to improvise and get involved. And, you know, so that was when I was maybe 10 or 11, and I started playing professionally a little bit around the Columbia area when I was maybe 13 or 14. So by the time I was in high school, I was playing a fair amount professionally. And then I moved to New York when I was 18, and I had the good fortune of meeting the trumpeter Red Rodney in Columbia shortly before I moved to New York, and so I joined his band.
Playing with Red Rodney put Potter into a very elite group, which also includes Charlie Parker and Ira Sullivan. But his musical background also includes more contemporary approaches.
You know, it was great to kind of serve a little apprenticeship as an 18-year-old saxophone player really playing bebop with one of the guys that, you know, was around, like really plays bebop. And then a lot of other experiences since. I mean, playing completely free with Paul Motion, you know, dealing with Dave Holland's music, all the metric kind of stuff and the interactive thing with that, you know, Jim Hall, you know, just a whole bunch of people that I feel really fortunate that I've had a chance to work with.
Born in 1971, Potter shares an interest in a wide range of music with many of his contemporaries, who listen to all kinds of music from all kinds of places. Here he's paying tribute to another giant of the past, one who I'm sure played Stella by Starlight when it was a brand new tune. Here's an excerpt from Potter's 4-minute introduction to Boogie Stop Shuffle by the late great bassist Charles Mingus. Now let's get back to our story. When Potter moved to New York City to attend the New School and later the Manhattan School of Music, his first night in town was both exhilarating and a rude awakening.
The first night I moved to New York, I remember, is when I met Larry Goldings and Pete Bernstein and Bill Stewart, and they were just playing up there for tips, you know, and I went, man, New York is rough. These guys are playing for tips. They sounded amazing.
Potter soon joined them.
Playing in New York with my friends that were kind of the same age as me too, that we used to do all these gigs at this place. It's now called Smoke, which is called Augie's at the time. And, you know, it's like you just pass the hat. You might make like $20 a night and then you pass the hat.
At this point, Potter is way past passing the hat. He's toured extensively in Europe and across the U.S. and has worked in the bands of Steve Swallow, Dave Douglas, and Dave Holland. In 2000, he performed on Steely Dan's Grammy Award-winning album, Two Against Nature. He received his own Grammy nomination for Best Instrumental Jazz Solo on Joanne Brachin's Pink Elephant Magic. Something very different about this band. You might have already heard it, but if not, listen again, in particular to the bass. When I asked Potter how keyboardist Craig Taborn reacted when he asked him to join a band with no bass player, this was his first answer. Then he continued.
Well, I mean, you know, I hope he enjoys doing it. I know it's kind of double duty for him. You know, he has to keep the bass thing going too, sort of like an organ player would. But I mean, he doesn't approach it like, you know, he just kind of has his own way of approaching music anyway. So he has his own way of approaching that set of problems. And it just, you know, for me, it's very cool, partially because if he's comping in the right hand, you know, if he's playing chords and stuff, you know, well, he's completely hooked up with the left hand, which is the bass part, in a way that most bands aren't. It's a different person playing the bass and then playing the chords. But in this situation, it's the same. So it's kind of this, you know, organic thing where it can go from one to the other.
I asked Potter why he chose to create a band with no bass player.
Well, you know, there was a bunch of music that I had written, and I kind of was looking for the sound of the band. I mean, I knew it would kind of be in this direction, a little more funk-oriented, I guess. You know, still very, very organic and very kind of interactive, but some kind of more electric kind of texture. And I wasn't really hearing electric bass on it. I wasn't really hearing acoustic bass on it. I didn't know what I was hearing. I actually did a bunch of gigs, just like a series of experimental gigs I booked at the 55 bar, which with, you know, a few different configurations, I guess. Organ was a thought, you know. But that kind of put it definitely in one thing, too. And it wasn't until there was a gig that we did with Craig Taborn playing the Rhodes without the bass. You know, I thought, well, it's kind of a crazy idea. Who knows? Maybe it'll work.
Organic is a word Potter often uses when talking about his music. As we listen to his Celestial Nomad, he talks about his musical goals.
The music I want to make, you know, especially in like a small group where you can really stretch out as improvising musicians, I want it to be organic. I want it to kind of find its shape and I kind of try and think of a whole set as kind of one long kind of composition. And there's a lot of spontaneous composition that seems to happen in the band when you set up things in a certain way. And I try and encourage those moments to happen.
Earlier, I promised we'd get back to the Beatles. We'll close with a tune that I'm sure is dear to Chris Potter's heart, one that he first heard as a child, Yesterday. Los Angeles, for Notes from the Western Edge, I'm Richard Paskey.
Sun Ra was really the guy who really sent me spinning out of the rock orbit into the where I am now. You know, it's like somebody just went, boom, you know, wake up, here it is.
Larry Oakes was hosting radio shows on his college station in Philadelphia back in the late 1960s when a friend told him he should go check out this guy named Sun Ra, who
was working in a small place called Gino's Empty Foxhole, which was a converted church or a decommissioned church that had in the basement this club. And it was right on campus, and it wasn't far from a radio station. And somebody told me one day, you should go down there, man, see what's going on. And I went down, and the ceiling, you know, was like, oh, the ceiling was 7 feet. And these guys were 6'2", 6', you know, and they were on a stage. Okay, maybe the stage was like 6 inches. And there they all were. And they were doing this stuff, man, and, you know, with the hand-painted record Marshall covers and this little room, and it was just like,
I had asked Oakes why he and the other members of the San Francisco-based Rova Saxophone Quartet had decided to expand into the much larger Orchestrova, the group that had performed Electric Ascension the night before at Red Cat in downtown L.A. Inevitably, the discussion moved to Sun Ra, the musical iconoclast who pointed a way to free improvisation for so many musicians, John Coltrane included. It turns out that the idea for performing Coltrane's Ascension started out in 1995 as a recording project for Black Saint Records. It was a 30-year anniversary celebration of Coltrane's original 1965 recording.
We staged it basically to record it. We just thought it would be a cool thing to do, and that was the beginning. To be honest with you, I'm sure I wasn't the only one who really, we just thought we were going to go in and blow our brains out, and it was just going to be a thing, and then it would be over. And I questioned recording it, really, but the record label was into doing it, so I just thought, okay, because I didn't know what there was to do with it that hadn't already been done. But it turned out that it's very much a very profound piece of music. As simple as it looks on paper, there's really an amazing amount of structure to it that kind of keeps it having its own integrity. It's still fun to play.
Eight years later, the opportunity arose to perform and record it again, although this time it would be a very different ascension, an electric ascension.
The first thing that really occurred to me was, we can't do this again acoustically. We can't do this again with the same line. We did the same lineup that instrumentally that Coltrane did in 65, we did it in 95. And we just thought, everybody agreed, you know, if he was still alive, there's no way he would be doing it with 5 saxophones, 2 trumpets, piano, bass, and drums. I mean, the first thing that was obvious would be that there would be some kind of computer technology strapped onto this thing. And then it just seemed, we'd been looking for a way to work with Nels, and it really made sense to have an electric guitar in there. Just my favorite instrument. I always wanted to play one.
So with Nels Klein on electric guitar, Fred Frith on electric bass, and Chris Brown, Ikwe More, and Otomo Yoshinida on electronics, Electric Ascension was born. Here's one unadulterated minute of the 64-minute recording on the Atavistic label from 2003. Since their founding in 1997, Rova has championed the music of musicians from all sides of the jazz new music divide, among them Terry Riley, Alvin Curran, Anthony Braxton, and Steve Lacy, heard here in Oak's arrangement of Undone. Oak's told me how and why Rova was formed.
It was 1977, and San Francisco was full of musicians at that time who were trying to find ways to stretch the boundaries of jazz through so-called free improvisation and also through writing music that wasn't bounded or structured to just be a series of chord changes, the head, chord changes, head stuff. And there were more serious wind players around than there were rhythm sections. So Bruce Ackley had this idea that he would like to do something with just wind players. And in fact, had been in a group called Sound System, Sound Something, which was alto, soprano, and trumpet. So somebody called him about a one-off festival, and he called me. I just moved back to town. I moved up to Mendocino. So we got together for the one concert, and then the festival got delayed 3 months. So we actually had, instead of getting together and just kind of working up a couple of pieces quickly, we actually had 3 months.
At the end of those 3 months, Rova played their first gig and recorded it. Oakes was surprised by the result.
I listened to this tape after the concert was over, having been pretty uncomfortable during most of the concert. I mean, not real, you know, I mean, in the sense that we'd never done it before. And I was, number one, nervous, and number two, not sure how the music was going. And I listened back to this tape and I thought, wow, I don't think I've ever heard anything like this before. And so I called everybody up. I said, you know what? Let's keep doing this for a while. And I sent off some tapes to Europe. And sometime around June, I got a letter from somebody saying we wanted to come to the festival next May, 1979. And that was it. You know, then we had a reason to keep going. And there was always kept being reasons to keep going. Record, recording stuff, you know, just on and on. This group that was supposed to be one gig, still here.
But Rova is not all Oakes does. He also works with many other groups of improvisers, including Maybe Monday with Fred Frith. His reasons for doing so are partly musical and partly related to the economics of touring as an improvising musician.
There aren't that many places to play, and the places that like this kind of music don't want the same groups back very often. So if you want to keep doing things, you have to have other groups. So I have this trio with Fred Frith and a Koto player named Mia Masaoka, which involves electric guitar, and Mia is on electronics, and that's a great group. A spin-off of that is a trio with Mia on Koto and a cellist acoustically, and me acoustically, and in that, it's all compositions involving improvisation. Maybe Monday is much more of a free thing, but again, when you talk about groups that have been playing together for 7 or 8 years, the idea of free is kind of, it's not only free the first time. After that, you start to develop a group sound or a group territory, and every time you get together, you kind of start from where you left off, and it goes and it evolves some more, and that's what makes this kind of work very exciting.
You're listening to Fly, 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 with Oakes on saxophone, Mia Masaoka on koto, and cellist Joan Jeanrenaud, who played with the famed Chrono String Quartet for 20 years. From this acoustic blend of East and West, we move to the trio What We Live, with bassist Lyle Ellis and drummer Don Robinson. With the addition of vocalist Sadette Turcose, This band is something completely different. Oakes tells us about the vocals.
She sings these long folk songs, Turkish folk songs, but she's improvising. I mean, she's very much an improviser at this point. But she doesn't do the jazz, you know, vocalese stuff. She's really singing these what are called long-form songs. They're stories. But she makes them work with what we're doing and vice versa. And that's really been a cool band. That's just getting off the ground. Since Sun Ra propelled him out of the rock world back in the 60s into a world of more freely improvised music, as you can hear, Larry Oakes has propelled much of his own music off the ground as well. In Los Angeles, for Notes from the Western Edge, I'm Richard Paskey. Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed the show. Next time we'll hear from the Los Angeles-based percussionist Adam Rudolph and the five-star general of a legion of guitar armies, Glenn Branca. In Los Angeles, for Notes from the Western Edge and Fresh Ears Media, I'm Richard Paskey. Until next time, keep listening.